This is episode 402 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, September the 17th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, Apple's new iPhone finally sees the light of day. With the new iOS 6 running the show, is it worth the upgrade from the iPhone 4? Or, if you're looking to upgrade any phone at all, is it really worth the money? And more importantly, how well will it talk to Australian telephone networks? Dr. Ron and Lena have eloped for the day, so Adam Turner, one of Australia's best and independent tech journalists, has kindly joined the panel tonight and will no doubt have plenty to say about the new Apple gadgets. Also today, it's rumoured that the US will launch a six-strike copyright system later this year. Microsoft are updating their online portals for the imminent arrival of Windows 8, and last week the new Windows Phone Store replaced the marketplace. Coders test the metal in the new Windows 8, and Nintendo announced the launch date of the new Wii U games console for later this year. And Acer pulls its smartphone launch over threats from Google. First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News.
Today, we're going to introduce iPhone 5.
Apple launches the iPhone 5. Google says it's not responsible for misleading search results. HP turns its attention to smartphones. And Microsoft hosts this year's Tech Ed on the Gold Coast. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The latest incarnation of Apple's ubiquitous smartphone, the iPhone 5, was launched at a special event on Wednesday last week. Pre-orders in Australia were being accepted from Friday afternoon, and deliveries will commence Friday this week. Australian pricing will be $799 for the 16GB model, $899 for the 32GB, and $999 for the 64GB model. Apple's Senior Vice President, Mr. Phil Schiller, at Wednesday's launch.
So, iPhone 5. It is made entirely of glass and aluminum. It's designed and built to an exacting level of standard, unlike anything we or anyone in our industry has made before. And I don't think it is an exaggeration to say that the hardware and software engineering that has gone into this product is the most challenging our team has ever taken on. And what they've accomplished is simply amazing.
The latest iPhone is lighter and thinner than its predecessors and sports a bigger 4-inch Retina display, which accommodates an extra row of application icons. The iPhone 5 also has a faster processor and faster Wi-Fi support. Google Maps has been replaced by an integrated 3D Apple Maps product in the upcoming iOS 6, although turn-by-turn navigation functionality has been removed in the Australian market. Importantly for Australian consumers, the iPhone 5 supports 4G LTE connectivity in the 1800 MHz band. Telstra and Optus were both quick to announce their networks would support the iPhone 5 on 4G LTE. Vodafone said its network would support the iPhone 5 on its established 3G network. The iPhone 5 also has a new 8-pin connector. The previous 30-pin port, found in millions of iPhones, iPod Touch music players, and their chargers and accessories, has been replaced after nearly 10 years of service.
Our new connector is called Lightning. This connector is a modern connector for the next decade. All digital, 8-signal designed. It's adaptive to what those signals need to be for the different accessories you might plug into. It's more durable and much easier to use because now you can plug it in either direction. It doesn't matter.
Apple said it will produce an adapter to make existing 30-pin accessories compatible with the iPhone 5. But an expected feature of the new device was conspicuous by its absence: support for near-field communications. Technology analysts, as well as financial institutions like MasterCard and Visa, were expecting an NFC chip in the iPhone 5 to allow consumers to buy products and services with the contactless payment system. Spokesmen for both organisations said they would forge ahead with further development of the PayPass and PayWave systems without Apple at this time. Other products launched at last week's event included new iPod Touch and iPod Nano music players. The new iPod Touch features a 4-inch Retina display and a 5-megapixel camera with 1080p video recording. To other news this week, Google says it's not responsible for misleading search engine results and is contesting a ruling against it in the High Court. In April this year, the full federal court found on appeal by the ACCC that Google had engaged in misleading or deceptive conduct in 2007 after search results, in one instance for the travel agency Harvey World Travel, directed browsers to a sponsored link for a competitor, STA Travel. Justine Munsey, a partner in the media and intellectual property area at the law firm Addisons, spoke on ABC Radio last week.
Really what the case is about is the ACCC saying that consumers have been misled and deceived by the way that Google runs its search engine formulas and policy.
Ms. Munsey said the case centred around companies buying search terms of their competitors in sponsored links to attract traffic. Google said in an emailed statement that it believes that advertisers should be responsible for the ads they create on the AdWords platform. The federal court disagreed and ruled against the search giant. Now, Google has lodged an appeal in the High Court, arguing that the decision could have wider implications outside of just online advertising. But Mr. Simon White for the ACCC argued that while the advertisers pick the words and the headline for the link, it is ultimately Google that makes the connection between what the user searches for and the ad that is ultimately displayed. A judgment is expected in the next 3 to 6 months. Hewlett-Packard says it's building a new smartphone. The hardware manufacturer's CEO, Meg Whitman, said last week the company is working on a new smartphone in addition to a number of tablets, but wouldn't speculate on production timeframe or operating system. Analysts say the operating system will likely be Windows Phone or the Google Android platform after HP's decision in 2010 to abandon WebOS and release it as open source. HP is struggling against the success of Apple's iPad and tablets from manufacturers like Samsung. In May, the company announced it would slash up to 27,000 jobs worldwide, or 8% of its workforce, in an effort to generate annual savings of $3 to $3.5 billion. And Microsoft concluded its TechEd conference on the Gold Coast last week. After 4 days of priming developers and specialists with latest product announcements, Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012. About 3,000 people attended the event, described by Microsoft as the ultimate technology geek fest that you can't afford to miss. IT professionals workshopped Microsoft cloud solutions, virtualization, new office products, and developments in Windows Phone, and more than 50 of the 140 sessions at the event were devoted to Server 2012. For more information about anything presented at this year's TechEd or for registration at future events, visit australia.msteched.com. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
App Store, iTunes, 6%.
You can take my TiVo from my cold, dead hands.
And these are the lengths that people will go to now to avoid the Australia tax.
My PVR at home is owned by me.
Okay, you're dribbling, by the way.
It's owned by my pay TV company.
And brackets, it has a VPN, a hem.
And the hard disk unit's owned by the pay TV company. And it's controlled by me, but it can be controlled over the web.
Graham.
So who made that recording?
Graham.
Who knows? I've lost my mind.
Just because of the pending iPhone 5 launch tomorrow.
Google, what have you done to YouTube?
This is inevitable.
Because this is just going to be a Pandora's box. It's going to open up all
it
sorts of issues.
It is a disaster.
People will no longer approach the bench.
That's right.
May I approach the Dropbox?
May I approach the Dropbox?
Yes, you may.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for today's program. I'm Andrew McCollum. And interesting that Dr. Ron and Lena aren't here this evening. Let's start some rumours. But I've got the A-team in this evening. Mark Diggins and Adam Turner. And g'day, boys.
Hey, we're in off the bench.
Off the bench. Yeah. Off the bench with the saviours for the show tonight. So thank you both for coming in. I'm sure we'll have lots to chat about anyway, because it's a big week for the Apple empire with their new all-singing, all-dancing telecommunications device that came out onto the marketplace. Adam, you can tell us a little bit about your thoughts, and Mark, you can tell us how it's going to connect into Australian telcos, maybe if it is or isn't or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. That's the news. And Graham, unfortunately, he's a bit indisposed this evening as well, and he passes his apologies on. It never rains, but it pours. But nonetheless, we'll have a good show anyway. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where you can come and communicate with all of us in the studio this evening. And, yeah, say g'day to all the other listeners there. I was just there a few moments ago. And, yeah, the regulars are there and a few new ones by the looks of it too. So, anyway, come along and say g'day. Lots to talk about tonight, and Apple is probably one of the big things. Any news that comes to mind, boys, that sort of jumped out that's just happened in the last little bit? Adam, you've been away.
No. Oh, yeah, I've been in New York.
You've been traveling the world.
Keeping up with things.
How's your body clock?
It took a couple of days. It's not too bad now.
Yeah.
It took, I left Melbourne on a Monday morning. I got to LA on Monday morning, which is a bit freaky in itself. Two Mondays is not really fair on anybody.
How long does it take you to get there? Half an hour, isn't it?
Yeah. But then I had to fly to New York. That was the problem. Then I had to fly to New York. So I got to New York Monday night.
Yeah.
I had Tuesday to look around. Wednesday, I went to the Nokia event, and then I snuck off to the Motorola event. Wednesday night, I had to write up all those stories. Thursday, I had some time to look around, and then I left New York on Thursday night. So I had 3 days in New York and got home to Australia on Saturday morning.
That's what you call around the world in literally a week.
Pretty much. But it took me until about Wednesday to get my body clock into some kind of order. I was doing the wrong thing and sleeping in the afternoons. And the thing is, I couldn't just rest because I had stories to write when I got back.
And could I
ask
you?
One of them was written in about five sessions, some of them at 3 a.m. It wasn't my best work.
Were you sponsored to go over there?
Yeah, I guess sponsored is the word for it. Nokia and Microsoft paid for my... Well, actually, Nokia and Microsoft flew two people from Australia. I think Nokia paid for one of them and Microsoft paid for the other. But really, they split the bill. You know, that's how they split the bill. So it was Nokia and Microsoft together paid to fly... Two journos from Australia, myself and Stuart Kennedy, who's the editor of the IT section of The Australian. Plus, they had people there from all around the world. So it was then a bit of a surprise when Microsoft said, by the way, we don't want to talk to you and we're not going to let Nokia talk about much on their own actual handset.
Really?
Yeah.
They flew you all the way over there to say that's it.
Well,
thanks
we found out a couple of days beforehand they were going to do that, and I wasn't too impressed, and I don't think the guy from The Australian was too impressed either. But we'd put too much time into it at that point to walk away, and I still knew it was worth going to talk to Nokia. But when they first offered it to me, I said, right, I want FaceTime with Microsoft. You know, fair enough, I'm going to see Nokia, but I want big picture FaceTime with Microsoft. Yeah, no worries. Didn't happen. But it wasn't Nokia's fault here.
Yeah.
I don't think it was even Microsoft's fault in Australia. It was somewhere, you know, the Prince of Darkness on high decided that we're just not talking to people. And even the hands-on with the phones was very controlled, and you could touch the phones and play with them a bit. But as soon as you went beyond what they wanted you to look at, oh, no, sorry, you can't do that, and they take it back from you. And when you'd ask them questions outside of what's Nokia, what they were talking about today, oh, we're not talking about that today. So I had to.
So it was really a phone and a Windows 8 event. Is that the
well?
The
that was it. Was meant to be the first official Windows Phone 8 launch, right? Because it was Nokia's launch of its Lumia 920 and the 820, which is a slightly lower spec sort of model. And it was meant to, because Nokia and Microsoft are in bed with each other. Basically, Nokia Microsoft paid Nokia a shed load of cash a couple of years ago. Nokia. Threw away Symbian, which was a dog anyway, decided not to go with Android, shut down development on its MeeGo like Linux platform, which was going to be its next big smartphone platform, and put all of its eggs in the Windows Phone basket, and then came up with Windows Phone 7 phones and now come out with Windows Phone 8 phones. So Nokia have kind of sold their soul to the devil, and then the devil turns around and says, oh, by the way, we're not going to really live up to our end of the bargain, because when we fly all these people in, we're going to tie one hand behind your back and tell you what you can and can't say. So, Nokia kind of got a little bit screwed in that bargain, I think.
Do you think there was something that happened that, you know, a few days before they let you know that, something's not working here when the latest release is coming out in a month's time? And
something went down because it wasn't supposed to be the way it was. That something went down a few days before.
What was the air like in the briefing room? Was everyone a bit suspect about what was going on? Were there any?
I don't know. There was quite a few people there. I don't know how many of them had quite twigged what was going on. I don't know how many of them had been pushing the way that
They may not have come from the other side of the world to have an interview.
And so they may not have cared so much about FaceTime with Microsoft. If you hadn't have been pushing for FaceTime with Microsoft, you probably wouldn't have even realised there was anything going on. Although I did notice that a couple of other pieces I read, I think a piece on CNET, also commented on how locked down the hands-on was and that you could play with the phones as long as you didn't. You couldn't even... Because with the Windows phone, you get a like your Metro interface, like what they have on the desktop. Oh, I can call it Metro. Don't give me that look, all right? I haven't signed a thing. I can call it whatever the hell I want, all right? You have your Metro interface with the tiles.
I didn't look at him.
I can see it was on the inside.
I didn't look at him.
I'm looking at you, Warlock.
Sorry? He's on Facebook.
Yeah. So this tiled interface that they have, right? And then you can flick that to the side and look at all the list of installed apps. You can't do that. Let's go into the settings and see. We're not talking about that today. So I was a bit dirty on them. But then I didn't feel so guilty about buggering off to the Motorola Google event afterwards. Originally, I wasn't going to do that out of respect to Nokia.
They paid you to get over there, but they didn't give you anything, so you're going to get something.
I'm a freelancer. I had to make it worth my while being there, right? The other guy from the Australian, he's a job, right? And some of my friends who were there for the Motorola event stayed for the Apple event this week.
Where was the Apple event? Which part of New York?
The Apple event was in...
Not the Apple event. Where was the Nokia event? Was it obviously Manhattan?
The Nokia event was in Manhattan, and it was right down the end of 23rd Street, up sort of like where on the Hudson, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the Motorola event was about half an hour walk away. On Broadway, but up near Broadway in 42nd.
Yeah.
So I had to walk down 22nd or 23rd Street or whatever it was, and then up 7th Avenue.
20 blocks. That's not too far.
So it wasn't too bad. But and when I looked at having to catch the train in the wrong direction to catch the train back and whatever, it was just easier to walk.
Oh, yeah, I did a lot of walk.
I lost nearly 2 kilos walking around New York in three days.
We caught the train in Manhattan and came out at Harlem.
No, I didn't. I got on the train going the wrong way but I only went two stops before I figured it out.
Oh, yeah, and then a lovely person came up and said, "You're a tourist. Don't be here."
You don't want to be here.
Platform and head back the other way.
Really nice, though. I mean, I didn't leave Manhattan because I just didn't have time, but the people were so nice and friendly and helpful down in the subway and using the ticketing system and just everyone. It's like, I actually said to one guy, "Is this New York or not?" And he said, "Yeah, we get a bit of a bad rap. I think New York used to be a lot rougher like that."
Yeah,
and I'm sure parts of it still are.
Before Giuliano, Giuliano came in, and the previous, I think it was about 2 years ago now, he cleaned up. He took all the park benches out of Manhattan.
I noticed that.
You can't sit down,
You can't sit down.
No,
yeah.
He took all the park benches out because that was where a lot of the homeless people ended up, you know, under their newspapers at night. Yeah. So he said, "We'll fix that problem. We'll get rid of the park benches."
Which isn't necessarily fixing the problem.
But having said that, it's an incredibly safe city to walk around.
There was one time I went out. I was working on a Wednesday night, and I went out about 10:30 to get something to eat. And where I was staying was in the meatpackers area, which was now the trendy area. And apparently it turned out that Fashion Week was on at the same time. So
downstairs, while I'm
trying to work, there's taxis and limos and stuff pulling up. Now, Fashion Week obviously attracts a certain element, right?
And especially for a male who's there all by himself.
So I walk out of the hotel going around the corner to get something to eat, and a guy says, "Hey, man, where's the party at?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. There's something going on in there. Yeah, I don't know." He's like, "Oh, wow, are you from England?" Everyone thought I was English for some reason.
They do.
"You're
from England?"
I said, No, I'm from Australia. And he said, "Oh, that's cool. You're here for work or for pleasure?" And I said, "No, I'm here for work." He said, "When was the last time you smoked some good marijuana down there in Australia, my man?" And I'm like, I got to work. Thanks, mate. I really appreciate it, but I got to work. And he was fine. He was like, "Yeah, no worries. Have a good night, my brother." And just, that was it. Walk off.
Love the accent.
So, but there was one time, then when I was wandering around to get some food, a couple of times I looked around and thought, yeah, I might not hang around here too long. I don't feel in immediate danger, but I feel that if I shouldn't be doing stupid things, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But down in the subway, even at night, I felt pretty safe. But like I said, I didn't really leave Manhattan. I'm sure there are parts of Harlem and Queens and the Bronx you could go to where someone would happily spit in your eye and take your wallet.
Oh, absolutely.
But I can tell you parts of Melbourne where that would happen to you as well. So, but I was Because, like, when you watch Letterman, right, for example, I went to the Late Show. I was actually went to Letterman. Yeah, that was awesome. But when you watch Letterman, right, and all these pieces about, you know, Central Park and the Times Square hookers and all this kind of stuff, and it, like, he plays up all the stereotypes of New York. Mm. So you get there ready for that, and it's like, oh, this is actually not too bad.
Oh, that's good. So Nokia and Microsoft have spent their money well to take Adam across over there to experience the life that is Manhattan.
They had such an opportunity to talk to people, and they squandered it. And it's going to be interesting in a couple of weeks' time when Microsoft turns around and says, oh, let us fly you to Sydney to tell you all about Windows Phone 8, or let us come and talk to you about it. It's like, well, you had me in New York. You could have spoken to me then. I'm going to be a bit dirty on them. Particularly if they had have waited until the day, because they wouldn't even give local release dates or pricing or anything. They wouldn't talk about any of that stuff at the launch.
Jumping the shark because Apple had their imminent thing coming out?
Well, some people were saying that because Motorola did it the same. Motorola and Nokia had theirs the same day. Samsung had their thing at IFA in Berlin the week before, and everyone's saying, oh, they're just getting in before the iPhone.
Yeah.
These events are planned a long time in advance. But you could also have taken a rough guess when the iPhone event was going to be. So I'd say it's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. Mm. And I thought maybe what had happened was that Nokia had said to Microsoft, oh, we've got to get our phones out before the iPhone. And Microsoft said, oh, we're not quite ready yet. And Nokia said, well, let us do it, but we won't talk about all your other stuff.
Yeah.
But I talked to some people who would know, and they said, no, that's not how it went down. Mm. So something happened. Someone at Microsoft very high up changed their mind at the last minute. And it was still worth me going. But like I said, that was one of the reasons why I went to Motorola, because I wasn't getting paid to sit on a plane.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting paid to sit in those press conferences. All I get paid for is words, so I had to make it worth the trip.
And did you really send the view from the couch from 30-odd thousand feet in a Qantas A380 on the way back?
Because
I didn't think they had internet there yet.
They do. I was trialing it out. It was kind of...
Was it just you?
No, it wasn't just me. It was stuffed for the first half of the flight. They couldn't get it working properly,
really?
But then it came good.
Did you do a speed test?
About New Caledonia. Yeah, I did, actually.
Yeah, isn't it?
I think I've got a screenshot of it somewhere.
And did you
it wasn't much.
And did you do what I did with my... I tried to use... What's the Skype to actually call my wife
They tell you not to use Skype.
Yeah, I've learnt the hard way.
Either they come and find you.
No.
Andrew McCollum, row 2F.
No. I was flying between San Francisco, and I was on a Virgin flight, and Virgin America have the internet. You pay your $7 and you get a month's worth of worth out of it. And I was flying from San Francisco to Las Vegas, and the novelty for an Australian who's never had internet at, 40-odd thousand feet, it's quite good. What can I do up here, apart from taking photos out the plane and posting them on social networking sites? But, I tried to ring my wife and got her out of bed to hear very little. Did you ring me about, a couple of... sorry. Yeah.
Here's my speed test I did on my phone. I've got the ping times 2,900 milliseconds, not so great. Yeah. Download 0.41 megabits per second.
Yeah.
Upload 0.13 megabits per second.
Where did it think you were? Because on Virgin America, I was in Los Angeles. So
no, that was interesting. The Qantas one seemed to think I was in Australia.
Okay.
Because...
You VPN'd back.
Because I noticed that my phone set itself to Australian time.
Oh.
While I was still on the plane. Because it's picked up something that decided... and that was the other thing. I was trying to do... that geo spotting, where you say this is where I am, geolocating.
Yeah.
And at first it wouldn't work.
So you
but then when
see
it did start to work, it started to tell me I was in Sydney when I was somewhere over New Caledonia.
Okay.
So obviously whatever I was doing was VPNing back to Australia or somehow it seemed that Australia was the back end of it. But it was stuffed for the first half of the flight.
That's where it was talking to America, wasn't it?
I think that might be what it was. But I got to use it
for
free.
Yeah.
Partly because it's still in a trial phase and they sort of give people vouchers to check it out.
Yeah.
But also, we left LA 2 hours late. And
did
so they were feeling a bit sorry for us. And I mentioned to the woman I was interested in. She said, have as many vouchers as you want. And when I told her what I did, she's like, oh, awesome, have some more. And then afterwards, tell us what you thought about it. Because like I said, it's still in the trial phase.
So I
gave them a bit of feedback on what I thought of the login system and stuff and how it could be... It proved a bit.
Did you, apart from the speed times and things like that, was it reliable? Like it didn't cut in or
once,
cut out? Or
once
was it,
was once they got it up and running properly, it was.
Yeah. When
at first, there was obviously something wrong, but once they got it going, it wasn't too bad. And the speed, usable. It was usable for, I was using Twitter. I put a couple of photos up on Facebook, stuff like that.
It was all Wi-Fi connected, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you're all connected on Wi-Fi. There was two networks, and I tried to get into the other one, and I couldn't get in. I thought, no, you should probably stop before the air marshal comes and looks for you. That guy over there.
And then I gather it's satellite back. I haven't actually investigated that one, but...
Yeah, I think it must be. I don't see what else it could be. Yeah. Yeah. Unless there's someone on the ground with a Pringles can.
That's why your ping time would be so shocking.
Yeah,
because
the stuff that you and I have used has been to ground stations. It's different.
Oh, is that in the US? Yep, it's different over there.
I'm in the middle of bloody nowhere over the Pacific, so you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the stuff there, Qantas are still experimenting with stuff between Melbourne and Sydney now.
Okay.
Like today, they're still doing it.
You've just reminded me of something interesting they said. I think we couldn't use it until we were out of US airspace.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And there were certain times during the flight when we wouldn't be able to use it because we were flying through the airspace of countries where we weren't allowed to use it.
Oh.
I'm sure I remember them saying something like that. I don't know whether we flew over Guam or some other part of the US or what.
But is it because some poor person on the ground could actually connect into the aircraft's Wi-Fi?
No, at 30,000 feet, I don't think so. I guess it's just to do with regulations or something. Yeah.
It's a bit like how far do you have to be offshore before you can gamble on a boat?
Yeah. It was very much like that. I remember when I caught the ferry from England to Ireland once, there were rules about selling cigarettes and alcohol.
Yeah.
And on the first half of the trip, you could buy cigarettes. And then when you got to a certain point, they closed that and you could buy alcohol. But you couldn't do both because you're either in one country or the other. So, yeah, it did have a bit of that kind of feel about it. One of the funny things was on the I caught an A380 back, but I caught a 747 long reach there. And on the plane on the way there, they said to us not long after we took off, because we're flying into the US, you can't congregate on the plane in big groups, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Even though we're now somewhere, over the Pacific, we're near America, you can't have more than two or three people. They didn't mention numbers, but, because apparently we're a security threat.
Australians?
I don't think the people who were running the plane necessarily followed those rules. I think they just told us because they had to tell us, and then I didn't hear. Because there's a bar on those planes, and I couldn't see anyone going, sorry, two people only. You, go away. Take your martini and rack off.
Yeah.
I don't think they do that.
And no announcement when you left?
Oh, what, that it's okay to congregate?
Yeah,
now?
You can congregate now. We're only 30 minutes
you
out
too,
of LA.
You can talk to her now. It's okay. Yeah. No, I didn't. I don't think there was. But yeah, there was a few interesting things like that.
All right. Are you listening to Tech Talk Radio or Tech Talk Travel with technology segment this evening? Adam's just, if you haven't caught the first bit, he's brought a cough back too, by the sound of it.
Oh, no, I took a cough with me.
Did you? I was smart.
The cough was coming, so I went to the doctor and said, I'm going to be sick. I'm not really sick yet, and normally I wouldn't come and see you, but I'm about to be. And they went, yeah, all right, here you go, have some antibiotics. So I had them while I was there, and it made a huge difference.
Oh, very good. I must admit, and sorry, I digress here, some of the drugs you can get in the United States, and I mean the over-the-counter drugs.
Hey, my man. When was the last time you had some good Claritin down there in Australia?
Absolutely. There's some wicked stuff you can get over there that fixes headaches and sore throats.
No, I was
like
trying to stay. Even their food, I was being a bit careful with.
You've lived there. You know all about it.
I couldn't the opposite side, the complete reverse, I tried to get Voltaren gel, for when you got a sore throat or something. You have to get it via prescription.
Really?
You pay a fortune for it.
Oh, God.
Right, you've lived there. Maybe you can answer this question. What the hell is that smell?
What smell?
The food. Something about America. I've got a bit of a sensitive nose, right? No. Well, that's what I think. I'll tell you the
sugar
quick story. And no, I think it's not the sugar. I think it's the corn syrup instead of the sugar.
Oh, okay.
When I first got to LAX, the smell of the Starbucks nearly made me puke.
It was
such a bad smell. And then when I got to New York, I could walk down 14th Street and with my eyes closed, I could have told you every shop that sold food. Not every shop that served food, every shop that even sold food that had any food in there. There was this hideous smell. And after a day or two, it started to fade and I didn't notice it as much.
The best
theory I've been able to come up with is that I know they use corn in a lot of stuff, corn syrup
high
and stuff.
Fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if I could smell that and everything instead of the sugar. And that's why no one else could smell it.
It
started to fade. But, the smell of LAX in Starbucks was just hideous. It was so bad.
This is Tech Talk Radio. It's time for... We do other things on the show, apart from talk travel. I've got some Coro to talk about.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
This is from an email that was sent in from Michael from Woodend. Hello, Michael. Hey, Tech Talkers, thanks for a great program. I listen to it as I mow the lawn. The peace and quiet. That's what it says in the email. Anyway, you touched on internet over power lines We did. We briefly talked about them last week. I don't know whether Adam was probably up in the air, so he wouldn't have heard about it. But yes, internet over power lines, such as those in the house of the plug-in kind, you know, where you can plug a
Oh, no, there's two kinds of internet, though. There's internet over power lines in the street, and there's internet over wiring in your house.
Yeah.
And the other one's Netgear or whatever.
Yeah, that's power line AV, I think it's called.
It goes on, why, what, and where do they interfere with? Please go into some details and discuss. I use a D-Link one and get good speed, 10 megabits per second with ADSL 2+. How does this compare to Wi-Fi in the terms of safety? Can it be hacked? Thank you.
It's a shame that Graham's not here. If he's listening, he'll be champing at the bit. The phone's going to ring any second. It'll be Graham.
He's actually in the chat room. I can see him there.
There's two kinds of... There is actually sending the internet over to your house over the power lines. And that is the one that my understanding is causes a lot of interference.
Yeah, they've been trying in the US.
Yeah, that's the one that your amateur radio people do not like.
Robert Broomhead came in and talked about that several years ago, didn't he?
Yeah, it destroys radio waves. Like, it sounds like if you're a Melbourne person and you've been on listening to AM radio next to a tram, you'll know exactly
that's
what it sounds like.
That's the kind of thing
like.
We're talking about. But then there's a different kind of internet over power lines, which is not really internet over power lines. What it is internet in your house. So instead of running an Ethernet cable from your broadband modem in the study to the lounge room, what you do is you take two adapters and you plug them into two power points, and then you plug your broadband modem into one with an Ethernet cable, and then it runs a link to the other one through your home electrical wiring, and then out the other one you run a second Ethernet cable and you plug that into your internet television.
So now just using your power lead in your house.
So what you do is you're using the wiring in your house as a cable to make that Ethernet link.
We used to have intercoms like that. Remember those?
Yeah.
You used to plug them in and you could talk to the shed.
Don't try and do two of them at once. They will interfere with each other, I think. Yeah. And it depends on the quality of the wiring in your house and the distance between the two. Speeds might not be as good as Wi-Fi, but it's likely to be more reliable. Assuming you don't get a lot of interference that screws up in the first place, it's likely to be fairly reliable. But if you've got noisy appliances, and I mean electrically noisy appliances like
the fridge that goes pop.
Fridges that come on and off and stuff like that, they can interfere with it.
What about neighbours if they've got the similar thing? Because you're on the same phase,
I don't know enough about electronics to be able to comment on that. I don't think so.
The wireless intercoms so I don't know. Maybe there's something that stops at the meter box. But yeah, I don't know. But I would think if it's on the same phase, you might be able to speak to people up the street.
If you're trying to use... if you can't run Ethernet to your digital lounge room and wireless is not up to the job for whatever reason, then you should look at these power line AV adapters from the likes of Netgear and D-Link and I think Western Digital and a couple of others. They might be your plan B.
Are you reading the chat?
No, because my stupid MacBook has forgotten it has a wireless card. I've restarted it 3 times. I was going to get a new little chip off Lena, but she's not here. Okay. Hopefully her and I will be here at the same time.
I'd like to know how those those filters that you put on your power lines, the surge protectors and that, I'd like to know how they affect it.
They could. I've read that also just any kind of power board cause problems. I would think those filters might as well, yeah.
Okay. In the chat, Graham, who would normally be in the studio here this evening, has gone, damn, I wanted to be in for this one, exclamation mark.
I knew you'd want that one.
Followed by, Adam is already on the right track.
Oh, good.
And then he says, but the in-home ones also use more than the entire HF band, i.e. 3 to 30 megahertz.
So they can give off a bit of interference.
So if they're generating radio signals at that frequency, then yes, it's got a good chance of interfering with things in and around the house and maybe a little bit beyond the house. But
it'd be more localized than if it was coming from the power lines outside, though.
Yeah, and if you've got a radio amateur living close to you transmitting there, you're dead in the water. All right, so there you go, Michael from Wood End. Hopefully that one answers your question. All right, what else have we got here? Who's this from? No, Malabad, 87, at a ISP near you. G'day, guys. Love the show. I started listening to it via the podcast about a month ago. It keeps me thoroughly entertained and informed while I work at a rather boring cleaning job. Oh, okay. No job's boring, is it? Maybe the one I do. Anyway, there was a bit of discussion in a recent episode between the grumpy old guy and the gamer girl. Who are they talking?
Neither of them are here today.
I think Graham's the gamer girl.
Can you safe for me to read it out? about what the police might do if someone complained to them about unpleasant online behaviour. Anyway, he goes on to cite some initial stuff. I guess maybe you've got to look at what's sort of happened and transpired recently. The internet is really becoming quite a, how should one say, a melting pot of different cultures, and people do tend to put things up online, which is what we saw over the weekend with what's happened around the world and this funny video that's doing the rounds. And of course, it all comes down to each individual state and territory as to how they police those sort of things when they come up online. So, yeah, it's interesting times, really, when it comes to, you know, policing online. The story here, I think he was referring to there, was the Tasmanian police saying they're not going to deal with people's complaints if they get threatened on Facebook and the likes like that. So,
well, it's, you know, you've got a whole society out there, and the internet reaches most of them now. So you're going to get a big mixture on the internet. It just, the internet itself gives them a voice that they may have only had locally before, and now they've got to a lot greater audience.
A mass audience,
I'm sure the police would still judge things on their merits. If you went to the police and said, I have a stalker, they've made death threats on Facebook, I don't think they would turn you away.
No.
But if it's like, oh, he called me an idiot, they'd probably tell you to go away. So I'm sure there would come to a certain point where what they're doing is a crime regardless of how they're doing it.
Yeah.
And they will take it seriously. But what they're saying is a little bit of, come on, kids, sort it out yourself.
Yeah, and I think there's also laws. I think we played a grab last week. I'm just seeing if I can see it here. In relation to the fact that using public or telecommunications network to threaten and make unruly sort of things over is actually against the law.
The current laws do already sort of allow for what we're talking about. But it's a question of then how do you enforce them? I saw an interesting thing. I know it's a little bit of an aside. But the police were talking about forcing petrol stations to get people to pay for their petrol in advance.
Stop the drive-offs, yeah.
Because apparently like a third of the crimes they have to investigate are some ridiculously high numbers to do with drive-offs.
Yeah.
Now, that sounded like a stupidly high number, but even if it is, you know, 10 or 20%, as annoying as it would be to pay for my petrol in advance, I think the cops have better things to do than chase those people. So I can understand why the cops would be saying, look, we have better things to do than chase people for stealing petrol. And it wasn't just that, it was then the, you know, the stolen license plates and all the stuff that goes around that. If you do this, it'll fix a problem and then we can go and catch some real bad guys.
It's
so,
not that annoying to pay in advance if you're paying by card. Now, I lived in the States and that's how everyone pays, and anyone who doesn't, who pays cash, has to go and pay in advance. But that means that 90% of people pay by card,
so
and they put it in.
You pay by card at the Bowser.
At the Bowser. So you never have to go inside at all.
But then you don't have to set an amount in advance.
No.
I think that's what most people are worried about. Well, how do I know how much I need?
Yeah.
If I can do that at the Bowser and just go, I'm going to use what I need and then bill me, I could get used to that.
It's quicker. I don't have to go and stand in the queue to actually pay.
Where they try and sell you Mars bars you don't want.
Yeah.
Telstra could do this with their mobile. Swipe your card on the side of your phone and hope for the best.
And we have some of that already. We've got the PayPass ones.
We do, don't we?
You know, with the Woolworths have got their own, so you can just put it on the pump and off you go.
And PayPal have now got new little things that go across the top of your mobile phone. If you're a merchant, you can actually accept PayPal or credit card in the field through a little PayPal app on your. There's some great stuff.
This is leading nicely into the iPhone 5 stuff. Are we up to that?
Is it? No, I've got one more email. Okay. I just got to go through here. Yeah. Andy Bloom sent us an email literally at 7:30 this evening. Last week, I was looking through my credit card statement online and found a charge from found a charge from the UK about $50 AU that I didn't recognise. A quick Google of the company name listed on the statement said that it was a UK based company that supposedly sells those type of pills. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yeah, sorry about that, mate.
Furthermore, a large number of other people had also been charged similar amounts for these pills, all of whom claimed they had never initiated or authorised the transaction. I suspect my card had somehow been compromised. How this had happened, I don't know, because he's very careful. And the card was blocked on the spot. A new card was issued, and he's since got that. The thought behind this is that these scammers will bill you for the product and hope that the transaction either won't be noticed or the cardholder will be too embarrassed to raise a dispute.
Yep.
Although the dispute hasn't been finalised yet, my bank are working on it to fix the problem. Sorry, I just didn't want to read out the bank, and have been very good about the whole thing. I've also set up another account, and he'll use a Visa debit in future for internet banking. The plan is not to hold any funds in that account, transferring either from one account to the other account. So there you go, another one of those big scams. Thanks, Andy, for sending through that. So
I'm surprised that his bank didn't pick it up in advance. I was testing out Netflix a couple of months ago using a VPN.
Yeah.
And so I subscribed to it with my Australian credit card just to see if you could do it. And it worked.
Yeah.
And then 30 minutes later in the middle of the night, I got a text from my bank going, someone's used your credit card in America, so we're going to suspend it because we're worried it's been stolen.
Yeah.
So I rang him back and said, no, it's all good, and proved where I was. But that was good because then when I was going to New York, I thought, I better ring up the bank and tell them so I don't get my cards cut off. So yeah. I rang the bank and said, this is where I'm going, this is what I'm doing, how long are you going to be there? Yeah, fine. And I didn't have any problems.
Idea.
But yeah, I'm surprised that I suppose all the banks are slightly different.
Yeah.
But I think if that had have happened to me, my bank might have said, hang on, we don't think this is legit anyway. Yep. We're going to stop it.
Yep.
They seem to be doing more of that kind of stuff. All right, I've now restarted my MacBook about five times.
Still trying to get online.
I've got no wireless card. It just says no Wi-Fi card installed.
Oh,
but
really?
If I restart it enough times, it magically remembers.
Oh, really? Keep going. Yeah, have you got it this going. Time after the fifth time? No,
okay. Still going.
I'm an associated thing. I won the UK lottery twice today.
Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah. I've had an SMS in the morning and an SMS on the stuff.
Because now that I can't use Andy's card, I need some other money to buy those pills.
I'll forward the SMS to you.
Yeah,
okay?
Cool.
You
thanks.
Can claim
yeah,
it
I'll
for
claim
me.
It for
right?
you.
Yeah, those lotteries, I think I've won them more times than I can remember, but I've never had two in one day. You've done incredibly well there.
Yeah, you must be lucky.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the new iPhone that's hit the street or about to hit the streets after the big launch in San Francisco earlier this week.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Some would consider this sad news. Others might rejoice. Fujifilm has stopped making film for feature films. This is rather a sign of the times.
Call that sad news.
Fujifilm has mainly provided negative films for shooting and positive films for projection in its motion picture film business operations. However, in order to adapt to the recent and rapid transition of digitalization of shooting, producing, projecting and archiving processes of motion pictures, Fujifilm has decided to shift its business operations to provide products and services designed for digital workflow of motion picture and projection.
Well, smart thing to do. Maybe a little bit behind the times, I don't know. But obviously the demand was there before if they were doing it.
Well, Kodak disappeared a while back.
Yeah, if people aren't asking for it. But at least they're smart enough, rather than to push on, to look at the opportunity and go, right, this is where the opportunity is. This is what we can do. And if you're not the last person to close the door, with a bit of luck, you can ride the wave and pick up those customers as they make the transition rather than bury your head in the sand. So I don't know whether they've left it too late. I don't know the industry well enough, but it sounds like at least they're trying to make the transition.
Yeah. With the advent of digital stuff, it's certainly allowed a lot of indie producers in to actually make films, which otherwise would not normally have had the budgets to do so. Because film in itself is quite an expensive acquisition, whether it be 35mm or 16mm, depending upon what you were shooting on. And then you obviously had your lab costs on top of that. So, but nowadays, it's just a matter of sticking a flash card in something and going
and
record.
Off you go.
Yeah. Anyway, on to other things. Apple's iPhone came out. What do you reckon, Adam? Is it? I've read some of your articles in the mainstream.
Yeah.
And you're hedging your bets. If you're an iPhone 4 person, you're sort of thinking, disappointing?
No, not necessarily disappointing. But to be honest, if they said there's two model iPhone 5, the one that we've got and another one that's exactly the same but has a 3.5-inch screen and the old connector, I'd take that one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because it's got a new connector on the back. The thing that
new connector on the bottom.
And it's got an adapter. I don't know how much the adapter is. Yeah, there was rumors that it was going to be
$35.
Oh, yeah, standard Apple procedure.
But I don't know how good the adapter is going to be because Apple Australia was giving me the impression that you could sit this adapter. Well, say you've got a dock where you sit the phone on the speaker dock, that you could sit the adapter on top of that and then sit the phone on top of the adapter.
It doesn't sound good, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound good to me either. No. I'm just not convinced that...
fraught with danger, that one.
Yeah, not just for the phone, but also for the connectors on the adapter in the bottom, because I've bent the pins in my iPhone and on some of my cradles from them not being supported properly. So this adapter would have to have a bit on the back to hold the phone up, like to take the weight of the phone.
Yep.
So I'm not convinced that you would be able
thinner,
to do
it. Because it's thinner, isn't it? A lot thinner. Like
it's thinner and it's not as wide.
Size.
Yeah. I don't know how tight the connection is. But I do know that it's not really great to put a lot of stress on the connector that it has at the moment. So, yeah, I would be very wary about balancing it. So then what your option is, instead of getting the adapter, you get the cable, which is, I don't know, 20 centimetres long or something like that.
Yep.
Still not really all that elegant a solution because you've then got to lie the phone down next to it. Now, the fanboys will say to you, oh, it's all wireless now anyway. You should just go out and buy all wireless docks. That's a lot of bloody money. I went and bought these docks because they did what I needed them to do. I don't feel like chucking them all away and spending more than the cost of a new iPhone on all these wireless docks just because Apple felt like changing a bloody connector.
I agree. I've got the MacBook Pro here, and there's no portal for any... It's wireless, and that's the way it's supposed to be. But on the side of it, there's no Ethernet, the old traditional being able to hook into a network. You have to buy a Thunderbolt adapter to an Ethernet adapter, which is the $35 you speak of.
Yeah.
And everything needs to have an adapter these days. So, and even the old FireWire stuff. But, and everyone's, what do you need FireWire for? Well, I needed it. And you need an adapter for it.
That's the thing. People are... the problem is with you. If you don't like it, if you're not happy, the problem is with you because the product is perfect. That's what. That's the attitude that annoys me. It's like, I may have needed that. I don't care. So I get mail all the time. This is my job, to get abused for having this opinion, right?
That's good.
If I'm not happy with the product, that's a valid opinion. I'm allowed to say that. I'm not necessarily in the wrong just because I'm not happy with a decision that Apple's made. There are some good things about the phone. Some people will like the extra screen real estate, although... I'm not convinced that all of that the loyal users
watch stuff on an iPhone, do you?
Oh, people do.
Really?
But what I'm saying is, I'm not convinced. If you've been using an iPhone from the beginning, right, you're probably happy with 3.5 inches. The people saying it needs to be bigger are the people who are comparing it with Android. But if the iPhone's all you've ever used, you're probably fairly happy with 3.5. Like I said, the new screen is 4 inches. I'd be happy to stick with 3.5 if it meant it could still work with all my stuff.
Yep.
The phone's not any wider, but it's taller. So it's not going to fit in my TomTom car kit in the cradle in the car. Even if the adapter, even if the connector down the bottom was the same, it's still not going to fit. So there's all these things it's not going to fit with. It's faster. That's pretty much par for the course. That's what you would expect. The camera's better. The front camera's better now, and it does high definition FaceTime. LTE will be a big thing for some people. Again, it really depends on how much what you do with your phone. If all you do on your phone is a little bit of Facebook and email, if you're with someone like Telstra that has a decent network anyway, you may not feel a huge difference with LTE. If you're doing a lot of high bandwidth stuff, if you're tethering your computer to your phone, then you're more likely to notice the benefits of LTE. No NFC, no near field communication.
That was the big disappointment.
Now, I was disappointed with that. And I noticed that publications, the pro Apple publications, found surveys to support, oh, look, nobody wants it anyway. But if Apple had have invented it, had have added it, those same publications would be finding surveys to say how everybody wanted it.
Oh, yeah.
So you find the research that supports your bias, right? But I think NFC, they've really missed the ball there. Because it's in Android, it's in Windows Phone 8, and the nice thing about Windows Phone 8 is, from what I saw in New York, which they didn't want to show me until I found someone who'd forgot the rules and talked to me about it, was that they're tying NFC into the Microsoft wallet.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll be able to use it for transactions and loyalty cards and things like that. And Android's starting to do the same kind of thing. Apple, with their new iOS 6 software update, is adding something called Passbook, which lets you receive airplane tickets and vouchers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you then have to show the screen. Sort of like fancy QR codes.
Yeah.
But you've then either got to show the screen to somebody or have the screen read. You cannot swipe the phone over. Now, I think that Apple's missed an opportunity there. I think the reason why is because Apple doesn't like to just jump into something with everybody else. Apple likes to bide its time, get some agreements into place with some big players, come up with a killer application for it, and then blow everyone else out of the water. And that's what Apple's going to do with NFC. I wouldn't be surprised if they come out with their own special NFC standard that just doesn't work with anybody else, but they won't get away with that unless they've got something so damn good. So right now they'll be negotiating with, well, we know they've already got some of the airlines and other stores on board for Passbook. They'll be negotiating with the big merchants, your Visa and your MasterCard and all that kind of stuff, to get all this working. Now, Visa and MasterCard, if they've got any brains, they saw what happened to the music industry, all right? Mm. If you stick your head in the sand and think, oh, we're too big and Apple can't touch us, you're screwed, all right? That's what happened in the music industry. The movie industry was too bloody arrogant to learn the lessons of what happened to the music industry, right? And now Apple owns them, right? Apple owns the customer, and they have to do... They've got to deal with Apple to reach people because Apple owns a customer. I think the banks and the financial institutions are a bit smarter than that. They've seen what's happened. they're not going to give this up without a fight. So they're going to negotiate. They know that Apple wants to be your friend until Apple thinks they're big enough to stab you in the back, right? So they're going to be cutting some very tight deals and being very careful about this to make sure that they don't get cut out of the picture, because they don't want their customers, who they make money out of through financial transactions, becoming Apple's customers. Apple, in the long term, I think long play, 5-10 years, Apple wants to be a bank. Apple wants
absolutely.
To be a financial institution. Yeah. Not in the next year, not in the next 2 years.
Well, they're trialing it in their Apple shops at the moment, aren't they?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You've got, they've got something called, I think, Easy Pay is what they call it. And if you go into an Apple store with your iPhone, you can buy stuff from the Apple store and use the credit on your iTunes account to pay for it. But it only works in an Apple store. For now, right? That's phase one, as they like to say, right? Then you tie that in with Passbook and you tie that in with NFC and you put it all together. Suddenly, you could have yourself a PayPal killer. Now, if they tried to launch a PayPal killer today, they'd have another ping on their hands, right? It would flop. But if they build it up over time, start focusing on the mobile payment space, start with NFC and buying stuff from your phone, sort of build that user base and then expand that into maybe a more general payment system. That's what I think Apple wants to be, the iTunes of banking. They're already the iTunes of music and the iTunes of movies and the iTunes of books, right? They want to be the iTunes of banking. This is how big they think, right? They're not small time. They think long term. And so NFC will be part of that. But if they went with NFC now, they'd just be another player. There's not enough ecosystem there. There's not enough for them to walk in and take over. Mm. So they will just bide their time, let everybody else lay the groundwork while they... you know, cut the deals with the appropriate providers and stuff like that. And then when the time is right, they'll waltz in like they invented the bloody technology and just blow everyone else out of the water.
All right, let's take a look at the chip. It's an A6 chip, which is obviously the old A5 chip was in the previous generation.
That's nice because Apple usually introduces new chips first with an iPad and then waterfalls them down.
Okay.
So to see the new chip in the iPhone was good.
Yep. A gig of RAM inside of it.
DDR2. Off the top of my head, I think that's standard.
Is the DDR2 512 new? Is standard. It's new. They've upped the storage capacity of the device to a gig.
No, not storage. You mean
sorry, the RAM. Yes, okay. I beg your pardon. Yeah. And it's DDR2 RAM, which I thought surprising. It's not that fast compared. DDR2 1060. Yeah.
But you can't. It's not. You can't compare apples with apples. It's not fair to compare that against an Android phone or a Windows Phone 8 phone or a desktop machine, because they're all running different operating systems. So you can't.
But where you can compare it is for developers who are developing applications.
What have you got to play with? Yeah,
because they need headroom for all sorts of things these days. And, of course, if they don't have, you know, they've basically doubled their playground.
Yeah.
You know, it's renovated and put a new sand pit on so they can go and play over there as
but
well.
The problem is that means people with older devices suddenly wonder
that's
why stuff
catch.
Doesn't work very well.
That's the catch. So is this going to be the obsolescence for the older generations? Because I see that with Android, with my old phone. Oh, this application is not compatible with your device.
Oh. Yeah.
Bugger-bum, I've got to go and get a new one, or I've got to upgrade it or do stuff like that. And that's in the space of a two-year contract with a telco.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's the actual some of the stuff in the back end. Now, LTE, long-term evolution, we've spoken about this before. Mark's here this evening. Is LTE across all the different carriers the same, Mark, or are we going to see issues where obviously the phone is going to work better on some carriers than others?
LTE is the same in some respects. So... the LTE network, the way it works behind it is the same, but the bandwidth for LTE can change. It can be anywhere between 1.4 megabits per megahertz. In if you've only got a narrow bandwidth, you can use like Metro PCS in the US has only got 1.4 megahertz of spare spectrum they can use, right up to what you can currently use is 20 megahertz, I should say. Telstra's running sort of 10, 15, and 20, depending on where you are in the country at the moment. So,
obviously, the wider spectrum, the faster you get.
Exactly. Yep. So, you'll get more megabits if you've got more megahertz. So, depending on how they roll out, if, you know, Optus are only going to roll out 5, and that's compared to Telstra, who's rolling out 20 megahertz in, you know, on their spectrum, then there's going to be a difference in the data rates.
But so, if you're trying to visualize it, megahertz is kind of like the width of the pipe.
Yep.
Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yep.
Yeah, sorry, keep going. I was just trying to picture it.
So you get more water pressure down there because it's a bigger pipe.
Yeah.
So you get faster bandwidth.
So if we take it in 3G terms, 3G uses a standard 5 megahertz channel, and sometimes they can cascade two of them together to get a 42 megabits per second.
That's the dual cell, the DC that you see sometime.
I think so, I haven't got a
wireless
phone that says
modems.
It on it. Yep. So with this LTE, even though the whole background's the same, if you've got more megahertz, you can do more megabits per second. So you will notice some difference. What you will notice also is that LTE is a new technology. So there's not that many people on it. There's not that many devices out there. So as you get it now and you get on it, it's free. Whereas, when I say free, it's unencumbered. There's not many people. Whereas if I'm on the train on the way to the city, you know.
Yeah. What's going to happen next Friday or the 29th, when the iPhone hits the shops?
Yep.
What's going to happen to the telephone networks when everyone turns on these devices and the telcos are going to go, boy, there's some demand on our network we haven't anticipated. Is it going to go pear-shaped?
No, it won't. It won't, because they will be on LTE and it's fairly incumbent-free at the moment, you know. So where I see it at the moment is if I'm on the train and I try to do something and I wait, because at the moment if there's a busy network and I catch the train every day and, you know, sort of between South Yarra and the city, I can basically get no data because people are waiting on station platforms. And, you know, one hint was given to me that be in the front carriage because you're one of the first 32 into the scheduler and everyone else misses out after that.
Is that an urban myth or what?
Yeah. No, that could work.
That's true.
Really?
Yeah. So,
well, there's a tip
really,
then.
Yeah, it's a really good tip that, you know, if people, I mean, obviously if there's someone, you know, if there's 100 people waiting on the station platform and they're all waiting with their phones, pushing buttons, obviously they're already taking everything out. Yeah. But, you know, if you're going through from station to station and you're going through different base stations on the way, if you're in the front carriage, you know, you're going to get first into that base station.
So nice.
A bit of a hint, you know.
Yeah.
So, but also it's good for everyone who doesn't have LTE because it means people will get off the old networks and make room for everyone who's still there.
Exactly. Yep. That's right. So it helps everyone out.
So Optus, I think, have only just turned on their 4G network. I think I saw a press release come through during the course of last week.
Melbourne over the weekend.
In Melbourne.
Officially turned it on in Melbourne over the weekend.
So they've had it on in, I think they started in the Newcastle area.
Yeah, Newcastle first.
Yep, and then they've had Sydney, and now they're down to Melbourne.
And Perth, I think, is the other one.
Yep.
So, all right. So, and Vodafone, which is really the other carrier, have no interest. Well, not that
they've been doing trials. I'm not quite sure. Yeah, they've been doing trials. I'm not sure quite where they're up to.
Somewhere in.
If my computer would connect to the internet, I could look it up for you.
Yeah, I think they're still playing with the idea and looking at what spectrum they have. Like, they're talking about not going into the 700 megahertz spectrum auctions because, like, why do I want to spend, you know, let's say, pick a figure.
A metric shed load.
Yeah, $1 billion on spectrum when I might be able to spend that on upgrading my network to the 3G plus, as they call it, you know. Better money spent in their respect.
I think with Vodafone, that probably would be better money spent. Fix what you've got.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, so, and make it fast, and there's not too many people to overload it because they all went off to Telstra.
They went off to Telstra. Go away. I was there first, all right?
So if you're looking to pick up one of these devices in its early stages, you obviously want to get on a network with LTE. I'm sure it'll roll back to the 3G network, won't it?
Oh, yeah, and we'll probably have... Telstra the only one that do dual-cell HSDPA in Australia?
I'm not sure if Vodafone will now be having that or not.
Because that's nice. You can get 20 megabits per second out of that.
Oh, absolutely. This is the DC. You're talking about the two 5 meg channels that it uses together, isn't it?
Yeah, two of them together. Yeah. Yep.
So that's why I thought people complaining about no LTE in the iPad, that would work here. Yeah, but bloody dual-cell HSDPA wasn't too shabby.
Yep. And with LTE, that extends one step further. And, you know, you can have LTE on 2100 and 1800 megahertz, like completely different bands, and using them at the same time.
So you can use dual cell LTE.
Yeah, it's coming. Not there yet, but
that's awesome.
That'll be really good.
That'll be incredibly good for burning through your data allowance in a fraction of the second that you would.
Yeah. But I noticed when I was testing the LTE devices that what you said, the best speeds I could get were in the middle of the night. I was in Parkville next to, near where the zoo is and the big park around there. It was maybe 9 o'clock at night. I quite possibly could have been the only person using LTE in that cell.
Yep.
And I pulled down 42 megabits per second.
That's about as fast as it goes.
Yeah, and earlier in the day, maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I've been a couple of blocks away in North Melbourne, I was struggling to get anything out of it.
Yeah, and we've got to be realistic here too, that when you are capable of doing 42 megabits per second...
Doesn't mean you're going to get it.
Well... They've got to have the backhaul. I mean, Telstra will have it, but a lot of the other operators, yes, we're capable of doing something greater than 20, but actually our backhaul from that base station back to the thing doesn't support much more than that, you know. So.
In our chat, Warlocks just said LTE in Parramatta to the right of Penrith, to the left, but not in his area. And Gareth said there's nothing 15 minutes out of the Perth CBD. So
they're all coming though. Telstra's announced
amazing rollouts for LTE at the moment, haven't they?
Yeah, well, so they're all getting a bit edgy. Telstra's got
One, poor choice of words. They're getting much better than edgy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Edgy. I fell back to edge the other day, and oh, it's like walking down the street with one leg. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's my other trick, actually. When I'm in the MCG I cannot make a service, go back to 2G, and you at least get something.
If you're there at the footy finals and you can't get out on 3G, fall back to 2G.
Back to 2G purposely, and you'll get something that works. Yep.
Well, there's a trick, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good trick.
So if you're at the NRL Grand Final or
half an hour to send in a text message, though.
Really?
Yeah, at the Grand Final, I sent text messages at halftime that arrived at three-quarter time.
Don't they bring out their cows?
No, maybe, they don't. They haven't got cows around the MCG.
Haven't they got cows for the MCG?
Well, they need one. It was terrible.
Have they got them for the Grand Prix? I think you said they had them for them.
Oh, yeah, because they've got more favours with more people.
Cow is an acronym for sell on wheels. They wheel them in as required, but obviously not for the G or anything like that.
No, not for the G. No, they've got base stations around it, microcells, and in-building system for the whole G itself.
Really?
But it does get overloaded.
Yeah. I can imagine. Speaking of overloading networks, iiNet have buddied up for 4G with Optus. And apparently, because it's 4G, there's no free zone for... You know how you get the free zone on iiNet, where you get to watch the ABC and a few other...
But it's mobile anyway. Does iiNet's free zone exist on their 3G mobile?
I'm not sure, to
probably
be quite
honest. Probably not.
I should research
because
that.
It's all resold anyway. Yeah. All of their iiNet are a virtual mobile operator or whatever the phrase is.
Yep.
It's and like a Mason and all those.
Are the first... They are Optus's first 4G virtual mobile virtual network operator, I think.
Yeah, I was looking at their plans the other day because I'm thinking of getting one for my son, and I didn't see any free stuff other than what you get off iiNet webpage itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they do have good allowances for social networking, like massive 1 gigabit of social networking on top of your 150 megabyte plan.
So they separated it out.
Yeah, so they do. So it's almost that, and that was Facebook, Twitter, and there was a couple of other
things. So good for kids, because that's the kind of thing they want to do.
That's why I might get that plan for him,
All right, so back to the iPhone, which is what we're discussing. Obviously, it comes out very shortly in telcos and shops. You obviously get the choice of buying it outright. Everyone's announced their plans. Go and check your favourite carrier for the plan and that you want to be on.
Can I ask a question that if you had a 3G or you'd never had an iPhone before, this would be a good one to get?
Yeah, I suppose, because one of the reasons why I don't like it is because it's the least backwards compatible iPhone we've ever seen in terms of breaking things. But if you don't own anything else in terms of connectors and docks and stuff like that.
And if you got 3G, you're probably too old. Is it the iPhone 3, I should say, or 3S?
Now, if you've got one of them, and the speed difference will be huge, there'd be no... You'd be much more happier with it. Like I said, if I don't mind the iPhone 5, but if they gave me a choice of the same specs but with a smaller screen and the old connector, I would take it just because it'll make life easy with everything else I have.
One of the things that I'm looking at the moment, because I'm about to get a new phone because I'm out of contract and all that sort of stuff, one of the appealing things about the new iPhone, which I think will also apply to the predecessor, the 4, is that with iOS 6, you can actually use FaceTime over the mobile broadband network and bypass the carrier's ability to say, no, you must ring on our phone service. They've opened that up. And that's, I think, very much a case of the Apple's mentality of like...
So you don't have to make a phone call first anymore, is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't believe so. They've unlocked it on the... So you can use FaceTime out in the burbs to call. And with my kids, because they've got iPods... And they said, oh, Dad, can you get one of these? Because then we can call you on our iPods and stuff like that and FaceTime, which I think is going to be good. And I think that's part of iOS 6, which will be obviously rolling out onto the 4 as well.
And the 4S.
The 4S.
The 4S. The 4 will probably miss out on a few things. Actually, the 4S will miss out on a few things, and the 4 will miss out on a few more things. And Apple never really likes to bring your attention to them. So we'll kind of find them out the hard way.
Forced upgrade.
And they're little stupid things like... Bluetooth voice dialing or stuff like that. Just annoying things. It's almost like they've sat down and said, right, what can we do that's just annoying enough to push people over the edge and get them to upgrade?
Now, what's going on with maps? Because they ditched Google Maps.
Well, remember what I said before about becoming friends with people and then stabbing them in the back?
Yeah.
Exhibit A. Right.
Google Maps.
Apple came up with a new phone. Oh, we need some maps. Oh, let's be friends with Google, right? And we get Google's maps. Now, Apple and Google have been in each other's throats for a long time now because Apple feel that Google's Android was a rip-off of the iPhone and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of tension there. And Apple's finally got to the point where he said, well, we're big enough now that screw you, we'll do our own. Now, I think...
They haven't got satellites, have they? Google has.
But they don't need satellites. Does Google own satellites?
Google has a satellite.
Why would they want it?
So they can do their own imagery, I guess.
Screw that. You just get it off other people. Why own the infrastructure? Why buy the cow when you can get the milk through the gate? Or whatever they got.
Do you need imagery? They're maps.
Yeah.
No, you do need imagery. You need satellite imagery for your, you know, looking down at the houses and stuff like that.
Yeah, but if you're doing maps for navigation, they can be just a map. You know, they don't have to be a photo.
Yeah, but if you've seen the trailer for the iPhone 5, they promote all this great 3D stuff. Yeah. You can twist and zoom and fly over.
I know they're getting rid of the YouTube app as well. Ah. It's not going to be native anymore, but Google's releasing their own. I don't know if Google will be releasing their own version of Google Maps. But even if they do, it probably won't work as well because it's now a third-party application and it won't be as tightly integrated with the rest of the thing as it was before. There were, you know, like you can tap on this thing to make a call or tap on this thing to open this application and stuff like that. When you're a third-party application, you've got more restrictions. But when you're a first-party, when you're installed by default in the operating system, you've got a bit more freedom. So Google Maps and the Google YouTube app is going to lose a bit of that. So it'll be interesting to see when Google bring out their alternatives, how good they are and what Apple can do with their maps. But yeah, this is just a point of Apple going, yeah, we're big enough, we don't need you anymore, bugger off, we're doing it ourselves.
According to a report in the Sydney Morning Herald, wasn't one of yours, Adam, Apple has said that iOS 6 software will have more than 200 new features.
Oh, that's a crock. They always say that.
Yeah, it's spin, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. What I want to say is 150 of them are probably rubbish. Yeah, like they always...
Although some won't be available on the older devices, the new features include an updated mapping service and better integration with Facebook. Anyway, Maps I think is going to be the interesting one because I think I'm not quite 100% sure of the difference between the Google Maps and the Apple Maps. I think it's something to do with vectors and rasters and stuff like that.
We'll have to wait and see.
Bing Maps and they don't use Google, do they? And there's Near Maps.
But no one uses Bing Maps, do they?
I use all of them. Yeah. I use Bing, Google, and Near Maps.
The one thing Windows Phone 8 uses Nokia Maps. Nokia's Maps is now... God. No, it's good, actually. Nokia Drive.
Did you see it?
Yeah. Nokia was one of the few things they let me look at. It was Nokia Drive, Nokia Maps, and Nokia City Lens, which is the augmented reality. Hold your phone up to see, you know, it'll tell you what the shops are called and stuff like
Google
that.
Google Goggle.
That kind of thing. But the Nokia part of the strategic relationship or the friends with benefits between Microsoft and Nokia is that that all that Nokia mapping stuff is now not just available on the Nokia Windows Phone 8 devices, but is actually baked into Windows Phone 8. It's part of the operating system now. Mm.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Adam Turner and Mark Diggins are in this evening because Lena and Ron have eloped and Graham's not feeling too flash this evening. So we're continuing on and you can come and have a chat to us if you're listening to us live at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. A few other things to talk about too, but we might take a break and we'll come back and talk about those things. Well, don't forget we've also got the OddSpot gadget app and website of the week coming up towards the end of the show. And they might be a little different this week because Ron didn't pick them. All right, we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
And the show continues on in here. Oh, I finally can hear what goes on between the breaks. Hello, welcome back.
That's what
to
I said.
Tech
That's
Talk
not
Radio
my wife.
On today's show. just to the chat briefly, because we were sort of a bit neglectful there as the time was going on. Andy B's threatened to come in here, and he said he's half an hour away. That's probably about as much as the show that's left, Andy, so hang in there. What else? There's a few other interesting comments in there. Andy B, I poo-poo Nokia phone simply because of my past experiences. So, see, this is what's out there in the marketplace. This is, yeah. He doesn't like the N70 as well. So, yeah, there's a bit of phone gossip out there.
Oh, I wouldn't touch anything of Nokia's that ran Symbian.
Yeah.
Like the N8 and stuff like that.
There's one here I was going to read from Gareth, but it's just shot off my screen. I can't find it. Oh, here we go, Gareth. The maps on the Lumia are fantastic, but only Adam would know this because the rest of the panel poo-poo poo-poo Windows phone without actually using one. Well, I haven't got one, so how can I use one? Oh, I wasn't flying.
Lean on the right people.
Ah.
The panel that's not here tonight because I haven't got one, haven't seen one, haven't said anything about it either, you know?
Windows Phone 8 is very nice. It has a lot going for it. I'm not sure whether it's enough to claw back much ground against Android and the iPhone. But if if you'd never used the iPhone, you'd never used Android, if Windows Phone 8 had have come out with that first, people would worship it like the iPhone. It is really good.
The only thing I can say, first-hand experience with the iPhone is, sorry, not the iPhone, the Windows Phone, is Phone 7. Brian in our office had one, and he had all sorts of issues with it. Whether it was just a new device on a new, or sorry, it was a new operating system on a new device or what, just in its early days, and he just jumped ship as quick as he could because it was just one of those devices which
you're always going to be waiting for apps too. Your friends say, "Oh, have you seen the new?" No, I got Windows Phone 8. You're going to be like the social leper for a while. Well, but that was the same with Android for a while.
Android's an early adopter.
Almost at par now. You're pretty unlucky to not find an Android version or an Android equivalent, but Windows Phone 8 has still got probably at least a year.
It was frustrating being an early adopter of Android to have that same thing. Yeah.
Microsoft has attempted to patent the ability to switch off a mobile phone in a hurry by giving it a whack.
I've been doing that for years. It works with my television too.
Yeah, and what other things?
Prior art.
Other things around the house too, no doubt.
Yep.
Give them a whack.
Yeah, give them a whack, sort them out.
Well, there's always the technician's tap, I used to remember as a young lad growing up.
And the percussive maintenance.
That was a device that used to actually turn things on. Won't turn on, whack. Oh, there you go, that'll fix it. So, I don't know, don't like Microsoft's chances on that, but according to the United States' patent application filed in 2011 and published last week, Microsoft has come up with 26 possible ways that a device may be able to be detected from a whack, from which the user can then use it to switch off.
They're just coming up with as much stuff as they can so they can say, we thought of it first. 26, that's crazy.
Yeah. If I was Arthur Fonzarelli, I'd be taking them to court because he did it in the 50s.
Prior art.
60s.
Yeah, prior art.
Arthur Fonzarelli, that was the happy days, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd saw it.
Oh, dear. Anyway, now, whilst we're talking about patents, Apple was cleared of the Samsung infringements in the US. The patent wars continue. Apple did not violate patents owned by Samsung in the making of the iPod Touch, iPhone, or iPad. It was handed down by a judge at the International Trade Commission, apparently. Apple and Samsung have taken their bruising patent disputes to some 10 countries as they vie for market share in the booming mobile industry. So
Samsung was supposedly going to sue the pants off Apple if they introduced an LTE phone, so we'll see what happens there.
I haven't been following this well enough, but didn't I hear something about in the UK they said there was no case to answer for, and then they went to California, and then there was a case to answer for? And it's the same...
And Japan...
In Motorola, Google in Germany, Motorola are having to pull phones or something as well. So, yeah, it's a mess.
What about Siri?
Does anybody really care? I was never that impressed with Siri. I'll be interested to see if it's any better on the iPhone 5.
I reckon Siri is the base of a lot of great humour and jokes and stuff that you see floating around on...
Why don't you try the Google version too? Has that got a name?
I don't know. Terrible, I think is what it's called. I heard it was worse.
Oh, dear. And Huawei, is that how you pronounce them? The Chinese menu?
Huawei.
What he said. Yeah, Huawei. That is how you say it. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's in the game. He knows. Huawei. Yeah. Huawei, yeah. All right. Doesn't say anything like how it's written. But anyway, Huawei...
Oh, it's Nokia. It is Nokia. Because everyone looked at me funny when I said Nokia. Sorry, you just made me think of it. When I was in the US, it's Nokia.
Nokia. You said Nokia.
Yeah, and they all looked at me funny, so it is Nokia.
That's good. I got hauled across the coals, I think, last week by Lena for saying Nokia.
It is Nokia. Go and try and say Huawei again.
Weiwoo.
Keep going. Move on.
Anyway, that company...
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a few issues going on. I think I've heard it on a lot of the mainstream media during the course of the week. Everyone's getting a bit sort of antsy about their stuff because they've allegedly, no one's proven it, but allegedly they've got little back doors in their equipment that enables people to spy on things. That's what the rumour and scuttlebutt is.
Well, it's more than rumour and scuttlebutt because the Australian government banned them from contributing equipment to the NBN based on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've been allowed to do it in other countries.
Oh. Anyway, they're fearing further blocks. The organisation has warned against proposed legislation that could preclude companies from participating in public and private networking projects throughout Australia. The chairman, Admiral John Lord, told a parliamentary committee hearing last week that the proposals to change national security and telecommunications legislation could block the vendor or potentially others from selling to Australian government and businesses if implemented incorrectly.
I think that Chinese companies should be judged on their record.
Yeah.
Because I'll just leave it at that. You can't be any fairer than that. You're in the business, so you shouldn't say anything.
I'm not allowed to say anything.
But no, they should be judged on their record. You can't be any fairer than that.
Now, what do you know about this data retention scheme that's going to sort of it's slowly but surely. Sorry, Mark, you look shocked. I just thought someone, others might have heard about it. But during the last little bit, the Australian government's been copping all sorts of flack about what telcos have to keep in relation to your email and web habits and things like that. So the telcos have basically said, hang on, enough's enough. We need some clarity on what the government is proposing we keep and how they keep. Now, that's going to be a big impost, I would have thought, onto telcos for actually keeping that data, because they couldn't give two hoots about what people use as long as the meter's running and data is flowing past their electricity meter, so to speak. So how are they going to do that?
They'll do as they're told.
I'm sure they will. I know that Telstra has been keeping the, when you make telephone calls, you're the A person and you ring the B person. So, Mark, you could be B, I'll be A, and I ring you. And I know Telstra's been keeping that information for decades.
It's on your bill.
Yeah, exactly. But they keep it for decades. They don't keep the content of the thing. Okay. They keep the call records. Like, you can go back and they can say, oh, Adam, you first rang Andrew on this day back then. And
Also the local, your landline calls as well. Because if you want to dispute your bill, you can actually ring Telstra. And for $5, they'll print out a copy of your landline, exactly which call you made, so you can argue with your housemate who swears that he didn't make that many calls when it was clear that you did.
And
all right?
And then they'll meet you halfway.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, but I still remember.
Dear. Anyway, the clarity on the data retention scheme, basically the internet service providers have called for more meaningful discussions with the federal government agencies on the data to be captured and hold under prospective data retention regime. I think they needed, I think Ron, if only Ron was here, he'd be able to tell me. I think they used to have an okay from a magistrate to collect that sort of information, but now they're just going to legislate so that
collect it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
The government's going to do what they always do when it comes to anything like this. They're going to make it sound like they're going to make it worse than it really is, and then like they've backed down. So, for example, if they want to retain 12 months worth of records, they're going to imply or have it leaked that they're going to retain 2 years' worth of records. And then when everyone kicks up a fuss, they go, oh, okay, we're good guys. We'll meet you halfway. We'll make it 12 months. And everyone goes, yeah, that's fair. This is what the government does for every... This is what they do before new taxes. They leak that we're going to put a tax up 10%. So when they only put it up 5%, they look like good blokes.
Yeah.
This is what they'll do here. It's all rubbish and it's all just grandstanding at the moment.
Yeah. Like Telstra, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a playbook. It's a standard tactic. Everybody does it. And that's what the government's doing at the moment. They're making all kinds of noise and sussing people out. And in the end, they'll look like good guys because, oh, we only did this when, you know, they were talking the talk the whole time just to get what they wanted. And they will get what they want, because it's not just our government that's probably asking for this. You can imagine their great and powerful friends who are leaning on them to do this kind of stuff, the same people who won't let you congregate in numbers on a 747 coming into a certain country.
Them's the people.
Them's the people,
them's
yeah.
The people.
You can imagine, you know, some of this stuff will be coming from
filter?
On high. I don't think that's dead. That's just on the back burner. You'd be stupid to think that that's dead. That will come. He's just biding his time. That will be used as a big bargaining chip.
We're 12 months away from a federal election. Do you think it'll raise its head again about 13 months?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That'll be used as a big bargaining chip. What I actually thought they were going to do, which still might happen, because we've got a review of copyright law coming up next year.
We do, don't we?
This is going to be huge. I don't think some people quite appreciate the ramifications and the implications of this. It brings in the Optus TV Now stuff. It brings in your right to copy CDs, your right to copy DVDs, your right to time shift free-to-air television. All kinds of stuff is up for grabs in this review. And what I thought that Conroy was going to do a couple of years ago is if they won the IINet case and had them over a barrel, they were going to say to the ISPs, okay, we will give you a get-out-of-jail-free card. You will be have safe harbor or whatever they call it and be immune from this if you implement the filter. You do the right thing by us, we do the right thing by you. But then when they lost the IINet case, that, I think, changed things a little bit. And so now they've put it on the back burner, but that's a bargaining chip. And there's no way in hell that you've heard the last of that filter. That's my 2 cents.
Yes, and Graham agrees with
Graham's kind of, yes, Adam. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I can see it out of the corner of my eye. Go, girlfriend.
Yeah, absolutely. Further up, Graham's also said, Malcolm Turnbull said he wanted to review the decisions to exclude Huawei. I'll get it, Huawei. Yeah. From the NBN. Yes, indeed he did. Just on the subject of copyright and other things like that, the US looks like it's going to launch a six strikes copyright system for this year. Now, I came across this during the course of the week. But the United States is going to go ahead with a gradual response system for their ISPs to discourage illegal file sharing after many delays. Originally set to launch in December 2011 and then in June this year, the copyright alert system is now reportedly set to come into effect at the end of this year. So the system will cover 3/4 of the American internet users and is a collaboration between ISPs and the recording and movie industries. 6 strikes. That's a lot of strikes.
That is a lot of strikes. Yep. But their movie industry over there is incredibly powerful. The Motion Picture Association of America, picking a fight with them is like picking a fight with the NRA. They are incredibly powerful and they're well connected.
Well, a bit like Optus picking a fight with the AFL, really, isn't it?
No, way beyond that. Yeah, okay. These guys are serious. You mess with them, you got to know.
Because remember, we were talking about motion picture before. Like Sony, remember, they bought out Columbia and all those movie labels to become one. Because remember when their devices came out, which would enable people to record movies?
Yeah.
And they said, well.
And then the MPAA.
They'll buy them all.
Yeah. The MPAA came out and called the VCR the equivalent of the Boston Strangler. That was they did. That's what Jack Vallance, I think his name was, the head of the MPA, said that the VCR is the Boston Strangler of the industry. And look what it did. It was actually a great thing for the industry.
It was.
But they couldn't see it that way because they're so obsessed with their bloody digital rights management and locking everything down. And Sony are the worst. And I can hear Graham screaming from here. Right? But this is it. 6 strikes is interesting, though. That seems
well,
a
there's
bit
three generous. Strikes in New Zealand, and they're all getting letters now.
Yeah.
But 6 strikes in the US, you could move
letters,
by then.
You've been getting letters in Australia for many, many years.
Really?
Someone I know got one maybe nearly 7 or 8 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, but it was interesting.
From an ISP or from
their ISP. And they were telling me, and this was 7 or 8 years ago, it was a particular movie that they downloaded, which was a very high profile movie at the time. And their ISP sent them a letter that said, dude, we just got an email from, you know, the copyright police. It says you downloaded this movie. Just keep yourself nice, all right? Just watch yourself. But only that one time. And this person involved was a regular downloader of things, but not usually new movies, more like just TV shows and stuff like that, but not, you know, the blockbuster. So I think here they more target for who's downloading the Avengers, who's downloading the new Batman movie. That's the kind of stuff they look out for. And that, like I said, the experiences I hear from people getting those letters, it's more of that rather than pulling down the back catalogue of Futurama or something like that. But that doesn't mean that you can get away with it. Like, don't take my word as gospel. But I'm just saying they seem to target their things very specifically, and it's to make the movie industry happy.
And Graham in the chat says that they stop short of disconnecting you after 6 strikes.
What do they do? I didn't get that far down the story.
I
slap over the wrist.
I must admit, I was lucky enough to receive an email from an ISP many moons ago. It wasn't for movie violation, put it that way. yes, and it is. They obviously do get calls from other agencies and say, can you please tell your user 1234 to stop doing that, please?
Yeah. Well, didn't you get a call from the ACMA at one stage for doing that?
Settle. No, I got it from Optus, but that's all right.
From Optus through the ACMA.
Through the ACMA, yeah. But that's another story for another time. And
they were happy even with the explanation at the end.
Were they? I think so. They only got one letter.
Calm down and we're all right with what you're doing.
Stop it. Yeah. Yes. Anyway. All right. What else happened during the course of the week? In some frivolous matter, before we get into trouble, the New South Wales Police issued 46,667 infringement notices last year to motorists caught using a mobile device while driving.
It's not really frivolous, though.
No?
I mean, you kill somebody doing it, it ain't frivolous anymore.
Correct. The force revealed the figures as it reported on its latest compliance operation, which netted another 831 motorists using mobile phones over the course of a single day. That's not a lot, but that's a lot. You know what I mean? I reckon they probably only get 0.01% of people using mobile phones while driving.
Clearly, the message is not getting through. If people are still doing it now, they can't say, oh, I didn't know you weren't allowed to do it, or I didn't know it was dangerous.
Yeah, but the first thing you do, the first thing I do is buy a kit.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The reason why I don't do it is because I've got a kit. I will admit that before I had the kit, I did it sometimes, and it was part of my thinking behind getting the kit was the cost of the kit is the same as the cost of the fine, not to mention the fact that I might kill somebody.
I think the fine's actually now
it's at least $200, I think.
Yeah.
It's more than the kit. You get yourself a really nice car kit for $200 and some change. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder what it'd be like in other states, whether they just targeted New South Wales, because I know you see it just driving around, people yakking on the phone and talking and just obviously having no, and traditionally, call it me, I have an issue with some of these more expensive British and European cars. They tend to see, to me, in my eyes, they flaunt the mobile phone laws a little bit more than others do.
It probably depends on the phone you have and how important it is, right? If you've got a fancy smartphone, then you probably use it enough that you think it's worth having a car kit and stuff for it. But if you've got a piece of junk, old Nokia or whatever that you just use for making calls or whatever, you probably don't think it's worth the hassle of the whole car kit thing because, oh, that's for business people and stuff. And I don't make that many calls. And then you get in the car and make a call.
Yeah. Yeah, you always might get that
car. Cars come with them too. One of my cars, it's built in Bluetooth, and all I have to do is spend $2 on the bracket that holds my phone.
But if you've got a piece of junk Nokia, one or whatever that, Nokia 3210 or something, it's not going to work with any of that stuff, is it?
No, but you shouldn't have that phone.
No, you should. That's what I'm saying. But some people do. If they say, oh, I'm not really much of a phone user, I don't make many calls. And then as soon as they get in the car, they remember they've got to ring Fred about that thing, and they do. So I would be interested to see the stats of how many of those people don't have a phone that would really work with the car kit.
Yeah, there wouldn't be many now, though, surely.
You wouldn't think so. I'm not saying it justifies it, but I'm saying it would be an interesting statistic to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so cheap, though, to have a Bluetooth, even to buy one.
But as you say, Mark, the cars, most modern cars have Bluetooth built in, which means that you don't...
Not really. What do you call a modern car?
Something that's been manufactured in the last few years?
Yeah, I've got a
two-year-old
car.
Most people don't have a car that's been manufactured in the last few years.
But I'm not talking about what most people have. I'm talking about most modern cars.
Yeah, but most people drive a car that's more than 5 years old.
You're right. I agree with you. But if you buy a new car, and it's most likely going to come with it.
Yeah, but most people who buy new cars don't buy new cars. They buy a second-hand car that was somebody else's and is now theirs.
European cars that people like not talking on their hands.
But I'm just saying that, your average person has a car that's more than 5 years old, and when they buy a new car, it will be a car that's still 5 years old. Do you know what I mean? So it's going to be a long time. Look at the number of Datsun 180Ys and 120Bs, or whatever. Still on the road.
I'm
just saying, right? It's going to be a long time before everybody, your average car on the street, is nowhere near having this kind of stuff. Just because new cars have it, cars aren't the same as phones. People go, "Oh, I got to get a new phone because there's a new phone out." My car's a couple of years old. The new one's probably a bit better. I don't care. I'm not going to buy a new one because my car gets me from A to B. I don't think it's sort of fair to say, "Oh, all new phones have." All new cars have Bluetooth because most people don't drive a car that's 2 years old.
No, valid point.
But yeah, the I think I bought a Bluetooth hands-free kit. It's all wired into the speakers and all that sort of stuff. When I bought the Bluetooth, and it was expensive. Well, I thought it was expensive at the time, but it was probably almost 6 years ago now, and it was $120. I'm sure you can buy a lot cheaper now.
Oh, yeah, you get them a lot cheaper now.
Have you ever been on the end of a phone call when someone's been pulled over for driving on a mobile?
No.
I have, it's my wife. Gotta go.
I had someone else answer the phone call, and then I just want to talk to him. It was a work call, and I just want to speak to him. And so I took the phone call, and of course, the police was right behind me, saw me take the thing. Goddamn, a work call of all things, because everyone else had just said, no, I'll call you back in when I get home.
My wife hands the phone to my son. Not if I ring, but if she needs to call me while she's going somewhere, she gets in the car, she hands him the phone, then she starts the engine and says, right, ring Dad, tell him we're on our way home or whatever. Yeah, so he's eight, he's old enough to do this kind of stuff. He is her hands-free kit sometimes. Yep. And that's a reasonable way to do it. And then my son can put it on speakerphone if my wife needs to shout at me. But it's not a long conversation. Oh, we're not far away or this or that. And then if he hands it back to my wife, she'll just put it in the car cradle anyway. So there are different ways around.
Yeah, my wife does that sometimes too if it's not working.
In the chat, 3XEM says, no excuse not to use a car kit. Yes, totally agree. Phoenix K, my car's 15 years old, still works.
Good on you.
My car's about 10 years old. It still works too. It's going in for a service on Tuesday. GC, hi Graham. I put an aftermarket Bluetooth kit in my car too. I'm not rich. Like Andrew. What?
Yeah. Solidarity, brother.
Oh, dear. Yes. All right. So he can throw lemons from afar, can't he? Let's talk about other things, shall we? Adam, have you come across a Cloud Mobile A800 smartphone? No. Judging by the silence.
No, I'm going through the Rolodex.
Okay, well, this apparently is a new mobile smartphone by Acer. And Google has reportedly threatened to cut ties with the consumer electronics maker over its use of a rival smartphone operating system.
Why is Acer in bed with Google, are they?
Why can't Acer, this is the conspiracy.
Others do it because LG has got Windows phones and Android phones. HTC has got Windows phones and Android phones.
Yep. Well, Dow Jones Newswire reported that Acer has since canned plans to launch the cloud mobile A800 smartphone, which ran the Linux-based, and if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Ilion operating system rather than Google's own Android system. So they were going to run a Linux-based
system. Nokia was working on MeeGo, which is Linux-based.
Well, according to the Chinese company, Alibaba, which is one of those big sort of buy 10,000 of them, you can have it at a good price, which develops the system. Acer was notified by Google that if products ran this Linux OS, Google would terminate its Android-related cooperation and other technology licensing with their partners.
There's got to be more to it than that. It can't just be, oh, I can't believe you're going with somebody else. But also, Acer might have been doing it as a bargaining tool. Remember what I said before about people say one thing and mean another?
Yeah.
Maybe Acer were like, oh, well, if you don't go, it's a good deal. Oh, I'll go with them instead. Oh, no, please don't. Look, we'll do this, we'll do that. Yeah, okay, we won't. Now, there's obviously a story behind that because there are plenty of vendors out there who have plenty of handset makers who work with more than one operating system, including Nokia until they got into bed with Microsoft. And now that Motorola owns Google, they're focusing on Android. But unless you're either owned by somebody or friends with benefits with somebody, then you should have the right to pretty much do whatever you want. So there's got to be more to this. I got the phrase friends with benefits in the paper the other day. I was so pleased with myself.
Really?
It's easy to get it online, but to get it in print, that's, you know, I was happy with that one.
Very good. Just going back to Windows too, when you went over to check out the Nokia. The new marketplace for Microsoft, because they used to have the store, the new marketplace is coming out. Have you seen or heard anything about
that?
Sorry,
we're not talking about that today. You can see why I was annoyed.
I'm not Nokia, but obviously they didn't talk to you about it.
Yeah, you can see why I was annoyed. No, really? I didn't. I'm sure there's word around it, and it'll be interesting to see. The word is that pretty much all of the Windows Phone 7 applications should work on Windows Phone 8.
Oh, that's good.
But your newer Windows Phone 8 ones might not, because basically what it comes down to is, with Windows 8, they've redesigned Windows 8 on the desktop, Windows 8 on tablets, and Windows Phone 8 on phones to all run on the NT kernel. So to all have the same underlying infrastructure, which makes it easier to write applications for different platforms, and it lets the mobile devices enjoy some of the desktop security. But it means that Windows Phone 8 is never going to run on a Windows 7 device. Just wrong hardware. Can't do it.
Yep.
So some of the new Windows Phone 8 apps might not run on Windows Phone 7, but the Windows Phone 7 stuff should be able to run on Windows Phone 8. That's probably the most I could tell you about the thing off the top of my head. Oh, but also you'll be able to bypass the App Store. If you're a business, you can use SharePoint and email and websites to put line of business apps like your custom apps.
So you write it in-house, you can put it on your staff phones or whatever,
and
like that. Yeah,
Apple and others have ways around that as well.
Yeah.
So
Anyway, the new marketplace, you know, in the big ever continuous rebranding exercise, everyone does it at the moment. Microsoft have changed their what was it called? The Windows Phone Store is now called the marketplace is now called the store. So
it's not as dumb as Google Play.
No,
that's just
that went from store to play.
Yeah, that's just dumb. How's your average person supposed to figure out that that's the shop?
Yeah, Windows 8 not far off now, is it?
October, I think they're talking about the official launch of Windows Phone 8. So, which means we won't see the handsets until later in the year. And there's still some whispers that Australia might have to wait longer than we'd like for things like the Nokia 920, and that's one of the reasons why they're not giving us dates. Because they don't want those kind of headlines at the moment. They want us to say how wonderful it is, not talk about the other stuff.
Mm.
And then they were dumb enough to fake their camera demo. Did you hear about that?
No, what happened?
Nokia showed off at the launch how good the image stabilization was in the phone, and we compared it to the iPhone, blah, blah, blah. And then bloggers looked at the video closely and saw the reflection of the fancy camera rig that they used to shoot it.
Oh, really?
And I said, did we forget to say it was simulated?
Oh, they didn't put the fine prints on the bottom.
They've got everything to lose. They've got everyone watching them. They've got everyone ready to tear them down. this is their one chance to do something right. And then instead of having headlines about how great the phone is, you got headlines about how stupid Nokia is for faking their demo. It's a really dumb move.
Strings and smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Goes back to all that sort of stuff. All right. This is Tech Talk Radio. The Odd Spot Gadget app and website of the week are coming up. But before we do that, have you
noticed... Turkish delight?
Yeah, thanks, Alison. They're really yummy. Have you noticed everyone's changed their branding? Like Microsoft have straightened up their letters in their logo, and eBay did it during the course of the week. Did anyone notice that?
No, it's like relaunching the website. Everybody does it.
Yeah, but...
Like the icon on my phone is so small I couldn't read it anyway.
After years and years and years of the same logo, you know the funny eBays with the coloured, the different chunky letters? They've all gone thin.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look at it more closely.
Oh, you just notice these things as they go past, I guess. Who's next? Nokia, maybe?
Nokia.
The Finnish, manufacturer of all things. Are they going to have some half-decent handsets? They used to have good handsets.
The Lumia is a really nice handset. They really
There's two flavours, isn't there? The 900 and
the 820 and the 9... The 820 and the 920.
Would you get one, though, is the question. Would you get one? Would you trade up?
I'm too far gone in the Apple ecosystem to walk away. I am. When the HTC Desire came out, I said, this is the iPhone for people who don't want an iPhone. It's too late for me. Save yourself.
Yeah.
And it's that way with Windows Phone 8 as well. It is a really nice handset to hold. The screen is beautiful. It feels beautiful. It looks great. The operating system is very slick. If someone said to me, I'm thinking about buying one, the main thing I would say to them is, yeah, but remember, you'll be a second-class citizen for apps for a while.
Yeah.
But if you're happy with everything the phone does, if you're not sitting there going, oh, I can't believe it doesn't do this, this, and this, you'll probably really like it. It's very slick. It's sleeker than some of the annoying Android. The Samsung Galaxy S3 feels like it was designed by a committee of Korean schoolgirls to be used by a different committee of Korean schoolgirls. It's so annoying, and it beeps and tweets, and you just want to smash it. You've got to spend 15 minutes turning all the rubbish, bubbly, Happy Kitty, Hello Kitty junk off.
I've seen those Korean schoolgirls. They come up on the Samsung photo press releases. The same two every time.
And if Samsung want to steal something from Apple, try stealing a sense of style and elegance. You know, try borrowing that from Apple. But Windows Phone 8 has a lot more. It's very nice to use. But like I said, that's the one thing you got to think about. Is it going to do everything I want to do now, or am I going to be a bit frustrated that you know, I'm missing out? I'm not getting the new Angry Birds or Evernote or whatever it is that you know that other people have that you don't.
Games, yes, that's a buying.
Well, no, but see, games might not be so bad because it's easier now for Xbox games to be ported over to Windows 7 or Windows Phone 8.
Oh, we're going to see a lot of that happening now, do you reckon?
Whether it happens is a different question. But
it's a very small screen size, but yeah, in theory it's possible.
Yeah, but it shows the portable PlayStation Vita thingy, whatever. And
I went to Acme on the course of the weekend.
Oh, yeah, it's on my list.
Yep. Acme was really good.
Yeah.
Which is the Australian Centre for the Moving Images. You haven't got long to go. I think it finishes...
Because Game Masters
Game Masters. I think it finishes very shortly.
October, I think.
Yeah. But Angry Birds, they had on a big touchscreen. It was hilarious.
Nice.
It was like, imagine a big, probably a 46-inch screen, touchscreen. You could sit there and you just grab a handful of an Angry Bird, drag it back and let it rip and off it went type sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But Acme's good. If you've got kids... Oh,
well, school holidays are next. Actually, yeah, school holidays start next week.
Yeah, because you rock up there. And Lena's,
I'll put that on the list.
Lena's spoken about it. From the adults, you've got one end of the building, you've got all the great things that people of our age grew up with, like Tempests and you know all those great video games, the arcade style. Then at the other end of the building, you've got all the latest Xbox 360s with the dance crazy stuff. So my kids were down one end doing all that, and I was up the other end playing on misspent youth machines. It was wonderful.
Yeah, you can't put that on the school holidays list.
And just remember, you can't take food into there, and you can't take photos in there, which is rightly so, but you can have a lot of fun in there as well.
Okay.
So feed your kids before you go in. There's a trick. Otherwise, you'll end up... And they don't like pass-outs or anything like that either. So Acme, good thing to do on the school holidays if you've got them coming up and you're in Melbourne. So, all right, Odd Spot Gadget app and website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
In this week of weeks, how can you not go past the iPhone 5 for the Gadget of the Week? Half the population of the planet's going to buy one for no other reason than they can. The marketing department of Apple will certainly ramp up. It's 18% thinner, 20% lighter, 12% less volume in size. It's got an A6 processor. All the things that you'd expect from Apple, and a few things that you probably need and won't get, like NFC, as we've discussed earlier this evening. But for no other reason, I think it's got to be the Apple's iPhone being our Tech Talk Radio gadget of the week, because it is. It's going to be huge, because you look at what Apple do. Every time they release a phone, the total volume of sales of all previous phones is generally what they'll sell on the next phone. So by the time we get up to the iPhone 10, there'll be no other phones on the market. So
no one's going to be disappointed if they buy it, are
no,
they?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Not unless you've maybe a current user of the current model. Then sit tight. But other than that, the Tech Talk Radio app, a gadget of the week, is Apple's ubiquitous iPhone.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And because it's a bit of a Mac night tonight, one of the places where a lot of rumours hit in the app world, I don't know, you might frequent it a bit, Adam, I'm not sure, but macrumours.com.
Occasionally.
It's a great little website. They've got blogs there. People chat about stuff. All the speculation, scuttlebutt, rumours, everything you want to know about any of that Mac devices, they're everything in their range. You can find out a little bit of gossip maybe a little bit earlier, maybe a little bit later, but they have all the stuff there, which is a really good source of information, and more blogs. You can go and ask people questions there, all sorts of stuff like that, and great little tips, how to, what people, you know, on the right hand side of the screen, what people are talking about, how to do this, how to do that, why is my mountain lion doing this and that, all those sort of tech things that you want to know about.
How accurate were they for the iPhone 5?
I think time is one of those questions, really, isn't it? As you get closer to the event, people become more and more accurate. But in the way outside of things, they were good. They had some good, you know, photo shots of, you know, castings and print boxes and all those sort of things as we got closer, you know, about a month or so out. So, but I think
the stuff I saw is anything they were fairly definite on came out, and the other stuff that, like near field communications, they were not sure about this. It might be. We're hoping for it, but not sure.
Not many people were seriously predicting that they'd have NFC. Mm. They just would have liked to have seen it.
Yeah.
It would have been a real, it would have got a lot of votes across the line, I would have thought, if NFC came out. But anyway, so there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, macrumors.com. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
And just to continue on with the Mac theme, the app of the week is the YouTube app that's coming up for iOS.
And I thought you were going to give it away earlier in the night, but no.
No. As we said, that Apple and Google are not the best of friends anymore. And so Apple must be ditching the YouTube app and the Maps app, I think, in iOS.
I think so,
6.
Yeah.
Yes. And so Apple have its own Maps, but Google's now releasing its own standalone iOS app for YouTube, and I think it might be the same app on Android as well. Now, Google are saying that there'll be a lot more clips available on through this app. I'm not quite sure how that works. I guess it must be something to do with
the way
HTML5.
Written, yeah.
But it must be something to do with HTML5, because YouTube natively is Flash, and Flash won't play in the iPhone, but some YouTube apps are converted to HTML5, so maybe
that's it.
Google is ramping that up. So that will definitely be one to watch out on. But as we say, it's not built into the operating system anymore, so it might not be as tightly integrated. But then, because it's not as tightly integrated, maybe Google will get away with a bit more. It'll be interesting to
we'll
see
have
how
to
it
download
works.
It and give it a whirl when it comes out, won't we? All right, that's the Tech Talk Radio app of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. Jamie Bon.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
The wife of a former German president, Christian Wolf, has begun suing Google for defamation over search results, alleging that the search engine's auto-complete function added the words like prostitute and escort after her name. What's the world coming to?
Clearly clueless. Clearly has no idea how these technologies work if she thinks that Google's to blame for that.
Yes. Google has reportedly refused to comply with requests to remove the auto-completion terms added to search for Bettina Wolf's name, claiming they are simply the results of an algorithm.
Yeah, we can't help what other people think.
Well, that's true, isn't it? Depends on what people have written about it online, which will help. You know, that's the way auto-suggest works on Google. So, anyway, there you go. That's our show. That's Tech Talk Radio for this week. Adam, thank you for coming in this evening.
My pleasure.
And Mark, you've done a sterling job in
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, that's been good. We should do this more often.
Yeah, get rid of the others. Get rid of the dead weight.
Oh, they're down having... yeah. Well, let's not speculate on here. They've eloped together and leave it at that, shall we? All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back the same time, same station where you're listening to now, or in the pod if you're listening to us there. Don't forget, come and chat to us online whilst we're doing the show live, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And you can contact us through the website, techtalkradio.com.au. Till next time, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.